No.
Oh, we're not. Yeah.
What did I leave? What did I leave out?
The Sears.
Oh, my gosh. No, sorry. We're not adjourned. I'm sorry. I thought that was tomorrow. 534 and 535 are today. No, we are not adjourned. Never mind.
Commissioner Saltzman and I have both been waiting for this moment for a long time.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, really.
Sorry.
It is indeed 3:30, so we can start. Yep. Okay, Sue, go ahead and read these items. Sorry
about
that.
534, consider the proposal of Rich Attridge with the City of Portland Office of Management and Finance and the recommendation from the hearings officer for approval to change the comprehensive plan map designation from medium density multi-dwelling residential to mixed employment and the zoning map designation from R1 residential 1000 to EG2 general employment 2 at 2730 Southwest Multnomah Boulevard.
And did you read the second one as well? I'm
sorry. 535.
Yes.
Amend the comprehensive plan map designation and amend the zoning map for property at 2730 Southwest Multnomah Boulevard at the request of Rich Attridge with the City of Portland Office of Management and Finance.
Okay. So sorry, Lentz folks. You're going to have to take it outside. thank you all. That's okay. No, I did that to you because I didn't look at the schedule clearly, or I'm suffering battle fatigue, one or the other. At any rate, we do have these two items in front of us now, and I'll turn it over to Commissioner Fritz, who remembered that we do have a calendar to stick to.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. In 2012, the City of Portland acquired the now vacant Sears U.S. Army Reserve Center, and it's named after Jerome Sears. It's not connected, as far as I know, with the department store on Southwest Multnomah Boulevard. The terms of the transfer require the property to be used as an emergency management function in perpetuity. The city is proposing to use the site as an auxiliary emergency operations center to supplement the main emergency management facility in southeast Portland. The city has identified its vulnerability to seismic hazards that could compromise our bridges, thus severely inhibiting the provision of emergency response on the west side of Portland, since the primary emergency management facility is on the other side of the river. It is entirely coincidental that three of us happen to live on the west side of the river. And so I'd like to invite Sylvia, Kate, and Matt Quickstrom from the Bureau of Development Services to come and give us the presentation.
So, Commissioner Fritz, before we begin, I need to run through the land use
please do.
Litany.
And before I do that, I would like to ask the city attorney.
and I will read it.
Glad I'm not the only one suffering from battle fatigue today.
Read my notes, you know?
This is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. Testimony concerning the hearings officer's recommendation will be heard as follows. We'll begin with a staff report by BDS staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and will have 15 minutes to address council. After the applicant, the council will hear from individuals or organizations who support the applicant's proposal. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak. Next, council will hear from persons or organizations who oppose the applicant's proposal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. If there was testimony in opposition to the applicant's proposal, the applicant will have an additional 5 minutes to rebut testimony given in opposition to the proposal. The council may then close the hearing. As this is a non-emergency ordinance, it will pass to a second reading, at which time council will deliberate and may then vote on the hearings officer's recommendation. If the vote at that time is a tentative vote, the council will set a future date for adoption of findings and a final vote. If council takes a final vote on the findings and recommendation at the next hearing, that will conclude the matter before council. I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing council today. First, submitting evidence into the record. Any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to the council clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the council clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Second, testimony must be directed to approval criteria. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to council. Third, issues must be raised with specificity. You must raise an issue clearly enough to give council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. And finally, the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow counsel to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. And before staff begins, I believe we need to ask about conflicts of interest and or ex parte contacts, please.
Are there any conflicts of interest or ex parte contacts to declare?
I believe that I was at a neighborhood association meeting with Director Merlot where this topic might have been generally discussed.
I toured the site and spoke with city staff. So I think under these circumstances, that contact, that represents an ex parte contact.
I did the same, actually.
Any others?
So it would be appropriate to make sure that if anybody wished to contest or challenge those contacts, that you give them the opportunity.
Anyone wish to question or challenge members of the council on having had those ex parte contacts? Okay. It appears that there are no challenges to that. Thank you. Okay. So now we can proceed with the staff report.
Good afternoon. I'm Matt Wickstrom with the Bureau of Development Services.
And I'm Sylvia Cade, also with the Bureau of Development Services. We are the assigned co-planners for this case, and Matt will provide the presentation for council.
Also in the audience, we have Rich Attridge. He's the with the Office of Management and Finance. He's the applicant for the City of Portland on this project. The applicant's representative, Bev Bookin, is here. From the Bureau of Environmental Services, Elizabeth Reese-Cadigan is here. From the Bureau of Emergency Management, Carmen Merlot is here. And from the Bureau of General Services, Bob Keita is here. So, summary of the proposal. The applicant requests to change the comprehensive plan map and zoning map designations for the now vacant SFC Jerome F. Sears U.S. Army Reserve Center from R1, that's residential 1000, to EG2, that's a general employment 2 zone. This map depicts the existing zoning on the site. It's about a 4-acre site. It's developed with a 2-story brick-clad masonry building, a parking area, a maintenance building, and a storage building. The site's located on the north side of Multnomah Boulevard, between Southwest 25th and Southwest 28th Avenue. Sears Hall is a 2-story brick-clad building. That building fronts on Southwest Multnomah. And then, like I said, there's a large paved parking area as well as a maintenance shop and a storage building. The remainder of the site is planted with grass. The proposed zoning is, as noted in the hearings officer's recommendation, is the comprehensive plan designation of employment has two implementing zones, either EG1 or EG2. The EG1 zone is generally applied to smaller lots with a grid pattern. Typically, these lands are developed with high building coverage with buildings placed close to the street. The other implementing zone of the employment comprehensive plan designation is EG2. That zone is applied to larger lots with an irregular or large block pattern. These lands are less developed with low to medium building coverage and buildings that are set back from the street. A request was made to the hearings officer to change the proposed zoning to EG1 rather than EG2. The hearings officer found that while the EG1 zone was proposed as an alternative, no evidence was provided that showed that EG2 was an inappropriate zone for this site. As Commissioner Fritz mentioned, the City of Portland acquired the property in 2012 as part of the base realignment and closure program for the emergency management use program. The terms of the transfer of the property from the Army to the city through FEMA require that the city use the property primarily for the purpose of providing emergency management for services in perpetuity. The city acquired the property because the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management has identified the city's vulnerability to seismic hazards that would likely compromise the structural integrity of bridges across the Willamette River, just as Commissioner Fritz said. The loss of some or all of these bridges would severely inhibit the provision of emergency response services on the west side in a timely and efficient manner. Therefore, Portland Bureau of Emergency Management concluded that there's a compelling public safety need for a west side operations center to augment or as an auxiliary center to the primary center in southeast Portland. This is an aerial view of the site. This is the site here. To the east, we have a CenturyLink site, also in the R1 zone, so another non-conforming use. There's residential development to the single-dwelling residential development to the north, multi-dwelling residential development to the west, as well as single-dwelling residential development to the south. This is a full build-out map of the Auxiliary Emergency Operations Center from their master plan. There's four main phases of development that's proposed. The first stage is to do upgrades to the buildings to meet ADA requirements. The second and the third phases are interchangeable and are based on the availability of funding. That would be to for the Portland Bureau of Transportation to locate a road de-icing facility at the site. And another component of the phases is the installation of a vehicle fuel station to establish critical fuel capacity on the west side. And then finally, seismic upgrades would be done to the buildings so that they meet essential facility seismic requirements. The Portland Bureau of Emergency Management has also noted that they would hold neighbor emergency team meetings and trainings at the facility. Although a public safety facility is classified as a basic utility use, and that could be allowed in the existing R1 zoning through a conditional use review, several components of the overall proposal, such as the de-icing facility and the fueling station, are prohibited in the R1 zone. So after careful analysis, it was concluded that a change to the zoning would be appropriate and that EG2 would be the appropriate zone. With conditions of approval prohibiting retail sales and service uses at the site, limiting impervious surface to the amount allowed under the previous R1 zoning, and requiring coordination with the Police Bureau about security measures, the proposal was found to be, by the hearings officer, on balance supportive of the comprehensive plan goals and policies, and it meets the applicable approval criteria for the requested zone change. A letter of support was received from the Multnomah Neighborhood Association, and then we also got a letter from the Neighborhood Association as well that expressed concerns about the allowed height in the EG2 zone, and so council may wish to consider a condition of approval that limits the height on the site. If this is the case, the applicant has drafted a potential condition council could consider, and staff has prepared an amendment to the ordinance. Carmen Merlo and Bob Keita are here to answer any questions you may have about the long-term hypothetical development that could occur at the site. And finally, here's the hearings officer's recommendation. The hearings officer recommended approval subject to the three conditions of approval that I've already outlined, coordinating with the Police Bureau regarding security features, that retail sales and services uses be prohibited, and no more than 80% of the site can be developed in impervious surface area. I also have photos of the site. I can just keep those here for reference. It sounds like you're all very familiar with
most of us are. Yeah.
The site.
Yes. Right. Anyone? Okay. Good.
Great. That concludes staff's presentation.
All right. Any questions?
So was the restriction on retail sales and services.
The purpose
that something
of
something that was requested by the neighborhood.
No, that actually was the result of the transportation impact analysis, recognizing that if the site was built out to full capacity, retail capacity, it would generate too many trips. And so it's really more of a technical way of being able to meet the transportation approval criteria.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you both. We may have other questions later.
Okay.
So let's call on the applicant's representative. And the applicant.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Carmen Merlo, the Director of the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. I'm very pleased to be here to have you hopefully approve this ordinance. This really lays the groundwork for us to begin the development of the site for its intended use as a Westside Emergency Operations Center. I want to thank BDS staff, Sylvia Kate, Mac Whitstrom for all their work, as well as Rich Attridge and Bev Bookin for their work on this project. I know you've had a long day. I know you're all familiar with the project, so mostly I'm just here to answer some questions. You heard from Matt that we did receive an 11th hour request from the Multnomah Neighborhood Association to change the zoning from an EG2 to an EG1, and I want to turn it over to Bev Bookin at this time to talk to you about that.
Okay, welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Beverly Bookin, the Bookin Group, 813 Southwest Alder Street, Suite 320, Portland 97205. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today, and thanks to my clients for the opportunity to provide land use services for this very important project. You have heard, you know the history of the site, and you know the reason that we went for the zone change, comp plan zone change. We sat down and talked to staff from the very beginning and agreed that the EG2 was the appropriate zone and have worked toward that goal for now many months. You will also note that both BDS staff recommended approval of the project with this particular zone in mind, and that this was recommended again in his recommendation, the hearings officer. As you know, this is a change of the map, and therefore you become the ultimate decision makers. The Multnomah Neighborhood Association has been an enthusiastic supporter of the AEOC since its inception, despite the continued objections by one of its members, Mr. James Peterson, who has been opposed to the EG2 and supportive of an EG1 from the very beginning of this project. And since he's here today, I won't presume to testify on his reasons for doing that. At the 3/31/14 public hearing before the hearings officer, the Multnomah Neighborhood Association Chair, Moses Ross, testified in glowing terms about the neighborhood's support of this proposed project, including the proposed zoning. Apparently, at its 4/8/14 meeting, Mr. Peterson made a motion that MNA go on record to oppose the current proposal for EG2, supported by both BDS staff and the hearings officer, and request to change the EG1 based solely on the issue of height. And the difference, of course, is that an EG1 has a maximum height of 45 and the EG2 has no maximum height. We learned about this in an email from Mr. Peterson into the public record, and it wasn't until the 19th of May, about 6 weeks later, that Mr. Ross submitted the letter. Based on this letter and this 11th hour change, staff was so concerned that they wrote the memorandum that you have dated 5/2014, which outlined the many differences between the EG1 and EG2, the fact that this last minute change was of such significance that it had some significant procedural, legal findings and timing implications, things that were just simply not anticipated, we're sure, by the Neighborhood Association. And based on that memo, Ms. Merlo actually talked to Mr. Ross, and when he read the memo, he said, oh, my goodness, had we known what we were doing, we probably wouldn't have done it. However, the die is cast with regard to that. To the extent that the imposition of some maximum height has merit, there is no need to change the zoning designation, but to simply impose a condition of approval on the approval of the EG2 zone, just like the condition of approval that prohibits retail sales and service uses on the site in the very remote possibility that the site is no longer used for the emergency center, turns over because you know the zone runs with the land and therefore could go to any of the outright uses in the EG2 zone. But the retail use broke the bank with regard to transportation, and as a result, we agreed to a condition of approval. The same thing could happen here, just simply to put a condition of approval on some agreed-upon maximum height. In considering this in the last few days, the client, the applicant, is going to propose a maximum height of 75 feet with the potential, with the Type 2 adjustment, to allow that height to go higher. And let me give you the reasons why, because I think it's very important to understand how they arrived at this height. Unlike a private owner, the city needs the maximum flexibility on the site, given the intent to use it for an emergency center and related essential services in perpetuity, designed to protect the public health and safety in the event of major disasters or events. A 45-foot height limit is simply too limiting to provide the needed flexibility. Secondly, it is the city's intent to use the two-story Sears Hall in perpetuity, barring any unfortunate circumstance, such as fire, storm damage, or earthquake damage, that requires a building to be demolished. Moreover, it is about 60 years old and may reach its lifetime ability to serve its purpose, and it may have to, at some time in the future, be demolished and replaced. It would be at that time that the city would have to evaluate the size and function of a replacement building. Otherwise, there is no room on the site to build a second building. So as long as the Sears Hall is in use, we are not concerned that there will be a building of unlimited height built elsewhere on the site. Finally, to understand why 75 feet. Well, buildings designed to serve essential services must be built to a special standard that require an unusual floor-to-floor distance of 15 feet, because the interstitial spaces have to be hardened and have extra bracing, and also because there's a lot of communication systems that run between the floors. A typical residential or commercial use, the floor-to-floor is 10 to 12 feet. Therefore, a 45-foot building would, in any other purpose, be about a four-story building, up to four stories. But for our purposes, for essential services, it would be only three floors. The staff at the city would like to have the flexibility to go to up to five floors, which would be 75 feet. And remember, this does not count any height, maximum height does not count anything on the roof. Either communications facilities or mechanical space. It's only habitable space, and that is why they've chosen the 75 feet. With regard to that, we propose the following condition of approval to meet the neighborhood's concern about the unlimited height provision of the EG2 as follows. New buildings are limited to a maximum of five stories for a maximum height of 75 feet. The applicant may request to increase the maximum height by means of a Type 2 adjustment. This maximum height does not apply to freestanding communication towers that are regulated by Chapter 33274, Radio Frequency Transmission Facilities. So with that, we will welcome any questions you might have.
How many stories is the new Emergency Operations Center?
It's 1.5, and the reason why we have the half is because we couldn't... The satellite dish at BOAC would have been blocked if we had made a full two stories on the ECC.
And how many stories is BOAC, the emergency community?
Two.
So I can't imagine why you would need five stories on the Sears site.
We're not saying that we need five stories. In fact, we have no. I want to be very clear. We have no plans to build anything on the site right now. I think the concern that we have is we don't want to have our hands tied. If in the event we have, let's say, the earthquake tomorrow, and we do have to demolish the building, that we're now limited by only building back a two-story facility. Quite honestly, we see other purposes going into the Sears Hall, and we've already heard from quite a few bureaus that would be interested in having their regular day-to-day staff there. So if we wanted to have both, I guess, mutual uses of an emergency operations center as well as day-to-day activities, it really would need to be more than two stories in height.
But three would be more than you currently have?
Correct.
And that would be 45 feet, which would be the height limit of the...
It would be based on the 15 floor-to-floor, yeah. Another thing that had been mentioned, for example, 20 years from now, 30 years now, if you wanted to put other essential services, like a police precinct there, that might also be... Remember, we're talking about, by and large, crucial essential services that serve the citizens of Southwest Portland. And that's a consideration here.
So I'm going to want to know from BDS staff whether that kind of traffic generation was considered in the hearings officer's decision, because it would seem like if you had an extra three floors of office building or an active police precinct, that would be a lot more traffic coming and going, too.
I don't know the answer to that, Commissioner Fritz.
Yeah, I don't believe anyone.
Yeah, that's what I'll get BDS staff back later.
You mentioned freestanding communication towers are exempt from the height limit. Does that include roof-mounted communication?
Towers? Actually, it does not. And we can check, staff can check, but my understanding is anything that's mounted on the roof including mechanical, communications, elevator housing, flagpoles, what have you, are not regulated within the maximum height.
In other words, they don't count.
They don't count. It only counts to the top of the habitable floor.
Okay.
But the freestanding towers have height limits that vary relating on where they are in relation to residential, and they also don't apply. The maximum building height doesn't apply to them, but we put in this condition just so it's clear to everyone that they are regulated by Chapter 33274, and as a result, any tower of any significant height would very likely trigger conditional use review. So,
to be clear, Commissioner Saltzman, I don't disagree with that, that if there were to be a communication tower, that it would be subject to the regular regulations. I just think that maybe 45 would be a more appropriate maximum height than 75.
Director Merlo, I just want to make sure I'm following a couple of details. Under the assignment from the federal government through the BRAC process, we're committing in perpetuity that this be some kind of emergency operations center, right?
So correct.
We can't change that.
Correct.
And is part of your plan for developing the site to make the existing buildings more resilient?
So, Commissioner Fish, yes. We've got a four-phased approach. The first is to put in a west side fueling station, move PBOT's de-icing operations to the west side, do the required ADA upgrades to make the building occupiable, and then finally the essential service, the essential building upgrades. However, we don't have any of the money to do that, except for, thanks to the mayor and Commissioner Novick's leadership, we did secure in the mayor's budget, $1.2 million for the West Side Fueling Station. So that's going to be the very first thing that we put in. But that's all we have the money for right now.
And the contingency that we're now addressing is that for some reason the existing structure falls down or is destroyed through some act of God or whatever, and then you have to replace it. So we're talking about a fairly remote contingency from your point, right? Because your plan is to develop the site with the existing buildings.
Correct. Again, we have no plans to do anything differently on the property as far as the building is concerned. We have no interest in putting anything else on the property at this time.
I guess the other one last question I have is, are you asking us to consider this additional condition of approval, or are you just putting it before us for our consideration?
We are asking you, correct me if I'm wrong, Bev, to consider it as an addendum to the recommendation of the hearings officer, in lieu of reconsidering a change to the EG1 zone.
Exactly. And since you are the ultimate decision maker, you can impose additional conditions of approval. We believe the neighborhood's concern is legitimate, and so we're responding to that despite the 11th hour change. But more importantly, we want to find a compromise that will both show sensitivity to the neighborhood's concern and provide the flexibility that this very important essential facility requires.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for the applicant or their representative? If not, thank you. And are there anyone here to speak in support of the application? If not, we'll move to anyone who signed up to speak in opposition to the application. All right. Come on up.
Well, it's been some time since I've been here. Last time you were sitting in a different seat, Mayor.
Right, good afternoon.
Anyway, I own the property across the street.
Can you introduce yourself, sir?
My name's James Peterson. I own the property 2502 and 2520 Southwest Multnomah Boulevard. It's zoned CG with a maximum height of 45 feet. And across the street is the phone company, which was built by Lawson Construction, which happened to occupy my building before I moved in. They happen to have a fueling station. They park their vehicles inside, at least the large commercial trucks, and it was built below grade, half below grade. Originally, it was a mobile home park. So that's kind of the area. The rest of it's all zoned R1. This could be built using the existing R1 zone. I support the concept of this being an emergency response center. I just don't support not having a height limit. This is not the place for the U.S. Bank Tower. Okay? Now, I submitted the documents. I've never got a really written notice from the Bureau of Planning for some reason on this zone change. even though I've submitted that request before. I don't know why.
Well, we appreciate you being here.
I have a couple other things here.
Could I ask you, I mean, the 75-foot limitation that's been proposed, that's what you would want to see?
I would like 45 feet.
Okay.
And the 75 feet has not been presented to the Neighborhood Association. This just came, and the first time I heard about it was today. I'd also like to request the record be left open so the neighborhood could respond to that. Okay. I asked the consultant at the March 11th meeting, when Mr. Novak was present, if this could be built in an EG1 zone, and the consultant was clueless. Now, I don't know what you're paying her, but I definitely think that she should have been able to answer that question. She seemed to be able to answer questions about zoning today, but not at the Neighborhood Association meeting. I'm very clueless why she was even there. Okay.
This is an evidentiary hearing, so you get more mileage with us by stating facts and not making judgments and characterizing people's appearance in these proceedings.
Okay, thank you very much.
You get more mileage by sticking to facts and making a record.
All right. I also found that I presented in the findings, I requested that it be an EG1 zone, and it was, as it's outlined in the findings, the staff, for some reason, wrote the findings to match the agenda. There was nothing to deal with the 45-foot limit in the height findings. I have no idea why. That's the big difference between EG1 and EG2. It also seems to be somewhat inconsistent with the neighborhood plan and the Southwest Community Plan.
How is that?
And it's not consistent with the surrounding area.
How is it inconsistent with?
Because there's no height limit.
Everything else has a height limit.
You know, I'm only concerned mainly about the height limit. This is also a city walkway and a transit street. It's supposed to be pedestrian-friendly. An EG1 zone is more pedestrian-friendly.
But, Mr. Peterson, from the written testimony you've given us, you say, to begin with, that you support the location of an emergency operations center at this location. Is that correct?
I think it's a great location.
And so your sole concern has to do with the height?
And being I have no idea what's going to happen long term. Okay. And the adjacent property is the phone company, and it's built into the ground. It's half above ground, most of it. And it's not going to move long term because the switching center for all of Southwest is based there.
I'm just curious, how would a taller building impact your business?
It would ruin the view towards the hillside.
From your business?
From my business. Right now, I can see Council Crest.
Okay.
The other amazing thing, you're putting a nice $4 million bicycle path in front of my shop. I really want to thank you. It only goes six blocks long. It's in the findings. I don't know why they put it in the findings. I was also amazed that part of the findings were written by the consultant. I don't think that's consistent either. So anyway, what I basically would like is either an EG1 zone, so it's more pedestrian-friendly, or I'd like a 45-foot height limit on an EG2 zone. And I don't think that's a lot to ask. And if you're going to go to a higher limit, I'd basically think it should go past the Neighborhood Association so they could view this.
Okay, made your point well. Anything else you want to raise? Any questions for Mr. Peterson?
No, okay. Those are my main concerns, just the height.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else to speak in opposition to the application?
No one else signed up.
So I think we want to get staff back up before we close the hearing and tease out this. So let me close the public hearing.
So under our procedures, if the applicant wishes to rebut the testimony, they do have the opportunity to do so for 5 minutes.
All right. So we'll give the applicant or the applicant's representative a chance to rebut that. But let us ask staff some questions first here.
Well, just let me ask the city attorney. Let me ask the city attorney a question. It's my recollection that if somebody asks to keep the record open, we're required to. Is that correct?
Only at the initial evidentiary hearing, and because there was an initial evidentiary hearing at the hearings officer level, you are not required to by law, by state law.
Okay, thank you. But we have the option that we could.
Okay. Dan, do you have something that you want to bring up now, or do you want to?
Well, I do want to move that we adopt the suggested condition of approval and keep the EG2 zone.
So that means a 45-foot height limitation?
No, 75.
No,
75.
The yeah. proposed.
The staff proposed condition of approval would allow the EG2 to go up to 75 feet higher with a type two adjustment.
And Mayor, I'll second that for discussion.
Okay, so that's on the floor for discussion. Now you want to ask some staff questions?
What's the height limit in R1?
45 feet.
45 feet.
Is there anything anywhere close that has a height limit of 75 feet?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the contingency thinking here, but frankly, I find it almost inconceivable that anything 5 stories tall would get built on this site. But you know, so I'm not sure why we're having an argument about something that's that likely to happen. But
we ought to be thinking for the future. I don't think any of us can fully anticipate what the future may bring.
I agree.
But is it not so that in a future rezoning of the entire area that condition could be changed, or the zoning on this property could be changed? This is a condition of approval for this current zone change, but future zoning map, comprehensive plan map amendments could change it again.
That is correct. But most likely, if the city saw a need to vacate this site and no longer provide emergency services in perpetuity, which is the agreement for the land, it could revert to potentially private ownership. An applicant could come in and request a new comp plan, map amendment, and zone change, and perhaps rezone it back to R1.
How would this revert to private ownership given the terms of the assignment from the federal government?
Oh, that's right. They would take it back.
I have some familiarity with this because I was involved in the first round. I view this more through the lens, Mayor, of another Aesop's fable quote, which is slow and steady wins the race. And we are talking about a very remote contingency here. Mm-hmm. And we are, as Commissioner Saltzman said, planning for the future. And it seems to me it has been an enormous undertaking to identify this place and to start planning for this emergency center. We ought to build in enough flexibility down the road to give us the room. This body does not have a habit of acting precipitously. So if in the event remotely something happens, I assume there'll be a full public process about what would go there and the purpose. And we or our successors would not be indifferent to what the public thought. But we have an opportunity here to provide the maximum flexibility, and it seems to me you ought to do so.
I would respectfully request that we do allow time for the Neighborhood Association to comment, since it's been such a collaborative process up till this point. I, having known the Multnomah Neighborhood Association for many years and lived in it for 5, I think that they would, they may be fine with the proposed condition, but they may not be.
Yeah, I actually am in that camp as well.
Well, why don't we take a tentative, which we would do otherwise, and set a date out a month and give the Multnomah Neighborhood Association a chance to provide feedback. If they come back and say it's with a significant objection, we can reopen it. Otherwise, let's not hold it. Let's not stop it.
We have a letter from the Multnomah Neighborhood Association, right?
But it's not based on this new condition.
No, it's seeking a height limit of 45 feet, if I read it correctly. So actually,
yes.
I want to disagree a little bit with the premise, Commissioner Saltzman, of what you said. And that is, actually, we're not thinking about the future here. We're thinking about the present, because this is a quasi-judicial land use application to support a particular purpose rather than some visionary effort to rethink the neighborhood. So
I'm not trying to rethink the purpose of the neighborhood or this piece of property, but I am trying to say let's not lock ourselves into a vision of what an emergency operations center may look like or may require or may be subject to standards from the Department of Homeland Security at some future date that may affect the height and building envelope.
Fair enough. I hear you on that, but again, I'm having some difficulty getting my mental arms around the prospect that we'd ever build a 5-story building on this site under any circumstances, whether people liked it or not. But so it's a little hard for me to imagine why we need that. But I will stop opining and let someone make a motion. And we'll see where this
well,
goes.
I made a motion.
Just made one. Sorry. Yeah. So you're making a motion that that we accept the staff recommendation and the recommendations of the hearings officer, but add the 75-foot height limit.
Correct.
And
that's my motion.
That was seconded by Commissioner Fish. Sorry. Okay. So now, before we take action on that, do we want to give the applicant a chance to rebut, or are you content to let us proceed?
So may I intervene? Sorry. Is this the motion to amend the ordinance, or are we simply doing this as a means of discussion about how how staff will suggest amending the ordinance?
The latter.
The latter? Okay.
So does the applicant or her representative want to speak? Obviously, we're dealing with the end of a long day here, on my part at least.
I want to thank Jim Peterson for his concern, or his support, rather, of the use of the facility as a Westside Emergency Operations Center. I do want to rebut his statement that the Neighborhood Association has not known about the proposed zone. We've gone to the Neighborhood Association on at least two occasions to talk about the rezoning of this property to an EG2, so they have had an opportunity to review what that means and to ask any questions.
But what he said was that they hadn't had an opportunity to review the proposed condition of approval. Have they seen the proposed condition of approval?
You're right, Commissioner Fritz, they have not.
Let me also mention just a couple of things in order to frame our thinking. Aside from the fact that this is highly remote, this will occur, we're not talking about, in the R1, it was like you could build like 180 apartment units on that site. It would have been huge lot coverage. If the Sears building were to be replaced for whatever reason, it would be within the footprint of that building because all these other site improvements are going to be on the site and they're serving the other functions. So we're not talking about a building, this enormous building with this enormous footprint. We're talking about a replacement building in the footprint of the existing building, up to 5 stories, but probably not. But all other site improvements and buffering and everything else that's on the site would not change. So I just want to make sure that we're understanding kind of the scale of what we're requesting here, the context of what we're requesting here. Thanks.
Okay. Any more questions or discussion? So we will take a roll call on the motion.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
No, a 75-foot building in that location is completely out of place and not in character with the surrounding neighborhood. No.
Hales?
Mr. Peterson and I have not often agreed, but in this case we do. No. But it's approved.
First.
Mayor, and this is a tentative decision. Now, that motion is a tentative decision, which we will return to in 30 days, yes?
So
are we going to continue the hearing?
This is a comprehensive plan amendment. It's a not – so unlike other land use where it's just an order of council, this is an actual ordinance that you're going to be dealing with. You have an ordinance, and so it has a first reading. It has a second reading, and that's what actually changes the comprehensive plan and map amendment. So – if you want to be able to vote on it at the next one, you would need to adopt the changes to the ordinance that would include the 75 feet and the additional findings relating to the 75 feet today, so that you would then be ready to vote at the next one. If you're not ready to do that, you could come back. I mean, it would come back in a week, typically, however long you want it to come back for a second reading.
Council, is there, I want to ask a very basic question, is there an opportunity for the Neighborhood Association to be heard in any of the alternatives that you've just laid out?
You certainly can continue. I mean, it's like any other ordinance. You can close the record for now, and you can reopen it to take testimony at a future time. You could make an amendment to the ordinance at a future time. But just remember that with any non-emergency ordinance, 5 days have to pass between any amendment and when you can vote on it.
Well, maybe we can. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're saying, how long would it normally take staff to prepare the ordinance?
Well, they have it prepared today. That's why they have prepared an amendment that includes the condition of approval and revised findings to deal with the 75 feet. So it is prepared. You could, if you wanted to vote on that today, you could still then hear from the neighborhood between now and whenever. But
now in the second reading?
Yeah.
All right, well, let me make a suggestion here, and that is, although the council wasn't unanimous in our action on the motion, I bet we're in accord that we would like to hear from the Multnomah Neighborhood Association about the proposed condition, about the condition that has been attached. In my case, I feel that way because we've had a very successful collaborative process between the city, which is, after all, the applicant in this case. It's not some third party. It's one of our departments. And we have gotten to at least mostly yes with the community over what should or should not happen there. And I'd like to give that a chance to get verified, because this has been a successful discussion between the city and the neighborhood by and large. So if we could continue this for a reasonable period before we take action, I would like that. I don't know how the rest of the council feels. So perhaps 3 weeks. What's reasonable?
I just asked, is Mr. Peterson still here? When does the Neighborhood Association meet? Second, that's what I thought. So yes, 3 weeks would do it, I think.
So 3 weeks should allow the Multnomah Neighborhood Association to meet, for you to be there. Okay, let's try that.
On June 18th?
June 18th.
I may not be here that week. Anyone else have a scheduled vacation that week?
Okay, so we should have a majority here. So are we continuing? Is that the best thing to do?
Probably. Why don't we bounce it to the next week when I'm back?
Okay, following week.
I mean, let's continue it to a date and time certain so we don't have to have new notice. So, yes.
Right, so we're continuing it to the 23rd.
The 25th?
Fifth, sorry.
There's a work session scheduled right now for the legislative issues 2 to 4.
What's on
Wednesday?
How about the Thursday?
And Thursday's open.
Why don't we do it 2 o'clock Thursday?
2 o'clock Thursday, the 26th.
26th.
Okay. Continue until then. And now this time I mean it. We really are adjourned until tomorrow.
Hey, Steve, can I see you? I can come here.
Turned upside down.